I am at my wit's end. It should be so easy. He wants to build a wall, and he'll get Mexico to pay for it, and people believe this stuff. I don't want to go into a political rant. All of you have heard what I might say, and you know what I would say if I went on and elaborated about so much of this. But it would matter really little except to confirm that we're in the same tribe. We've made up our minds, most of us. My point is, you can pile facts up about a wall, about Benghazi, about whether an election was stolen, about climate change, about a birth certificate, about weapons of mass destruction, about the safety of vaccines, about whether HIV causes AIDS. People, it seems, will believe what they want to believe. We live in an age of truthiness. If it feels like it should be true, that's just good enough. And yet, the facts do matter. It matters whether sea levels will rise and eliminate entire island nations. It matters whether millions of species will vanish because of man-made climate change. It matters if children get sick and die because of superstition about vaccines. It matters if we go to war because of faulty intelligence. And it matters when people vote for a candidate because he says stupid stuff and people believe it. We live in an age where people have circled the wagons. We have too. And we think all the truth is inside our circle and all the danger and lies are on the outside. Truth belongs to our tribe and lies and danger are out there. I think we can agree, though, truthiness isn't good enough. There are important decisions that are being made every day and many more that need to be made. They need to be grounded in reality. We need fact-based initiatives. The stakes are high. How do we get the facts and eliminate the nonsense? Well, we need to start with ourselves. Before you can remove the speck of sawdust from a friend's eye, you need to remove the 2x4 beam from your own eye so you can see what you're doing. Many of you will recognize I didn't come up with that quip. As I read it before, it's traceable to the wit and wisdom of Jesus himself. But here's a weird part. Someone writing a letter to the Greenville News quoted that passage from the Bible to prove that we should keep Syrian refugees from coming to the United States. Really? To that letter writer, it meant we should take care of ourselves before we worry about anybody else. People, we are so far apart. How can we come together? And back to my main topic, how do we cut through the nonsense? We start with ourselves, but not in a selfish, paranoid, Syrian excluding way. We become aware of the sources and causes of bias, fog, and misinformation. We achieve clarity for ourselves, and then, only then, in the kindest way possible, if it is even possible, we work on spreading that clarity far and wide. And by kindness, I don't mean calling anyone an idiot on Facebook. My top three values are clarity, kindness, and forget the other one. But it doesn't really matter because, oh yeah, the other one, that's glazed donuts from Krispy Kreme. But I had to give them up because they were making me stupid. So really, clarity, kindness, and a delicious salad will get you through the day most times. We live in an amazing time. The era of big media is over. If Simon and Schuster won't publish your great American novel, you can publish it yourself on Amazon. You can grab a GoPro camera and a gimbal and make your own movie with pretty good production values. You can record an album and sell it on iTunes. You can blog. You can podcast. The gatekeepers, the ones who could say thumbs up or thumbs down for your book, your movie, your song, your radio or TV program, the all-powerful gatekeepers left the back door open And we've been streaming in through the back door and the windows and the chimney and tunneling under the basement. Today we have a combination of leisure and unlimited channels of distribution for our creative work. The result is a quantity of creative output unlike anything in history. The quantity is there. As for the quality, let's just say it's uneven. We have today the power to put anything out there and see if it flies. But with great power comes great responsibility. We have to be our own gatekeepers. We have to give thumbs up and thumbs down to all that stuff that's streaming through the back door and the windows and the chimney and underneath the basement. The stakes are high. We are talking about human lives, civilization, and the survival of species that, if we're not careful, may go the way of the woolly mammoth or the passenger pigeon. There are several sources of bias that we need to be aware of, and they are described in this wonderful book called Truth Enough. Truth Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. The author describes several processes that create what, in the title of my sermon, I call the echo bubble. According to the author, the first challenge is to understand selective perception. We interpret documentary proof according to our own long-held beliefs. So, for example, if you're afraid of foreigners, you can stand the sayings of Jesus on their head and use them to prove that we need to be selfish. If you're a Clemson fan, you see all the bad decisions the referee makes that hurt your team, but none of the bad decisions that hurt the Gamecocks. This is also called confirmation bias. I think the remedy for this bias is to recognize it and listen deeply to people who disagree with us. Test the received wisdom by affirming the opposite and see how it sounds. Be aware of your own biases. The second challenge to our understanding is selective exposure. The True Enough book says we indulge information that pleases us and cocoon ourselves among others who think as we do. I had a Facebook friend, a fellow from high school that I didn't remember, but he wanted to be friends, so I said okay. And then one day he and some other friends were saying some terrible, unsupportable, and really radically emotional things about Obama. And I happened to mention that I love Obama. And ever since then, I have not seen any posts from this guy on Facebook. I'm sure he's still posting. But apparently he unfriended me. Today, in fact, I hardly see any posts on Facebook in defense of Donald Trump. I'm suspecting there are some out there. But Facebook is really helpful in this way. It wafts into my computer the sweet, agreeable vanilla fragrance of opinions that agree with mine. So Jim Hennigan, Pat Job, Meg Barnhouse. I subscribe to the new... You should see some of Jim's rants, by the way. I'm calling him out. Awesome. Friend him, but be nice. I subscribe to the New Yorker, but not the National Review, a conservative journal. I watch Rachel Maddow, but seldom have ever seen Sean Hannity. I've heard of him, but that's about it. So last week I was shopping at Costco, and some books caught my eye. And here's four titles. Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. Sounds ominous. Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power. Crisis of Character, a White House Secret Service officer discloses his first-hand experience with Hillary, Bill, and how they operate. Clinton Cash, the untold story of how and why foreign governments and businesses helped make Bill and Hillary rich. Do any of these books sound interesting to you? Do you want to pick a random example to read about Trump's journey of ambition, ego, money, and power? And if so, are you equally avid to read about how foreign governments and businesses made Bill and Hillary rich? About a man who was about my age or older noted me looking at the anti-Clinton books and felt a kinship immediately. He struck up a conversation. He started to tell me about other of his favorite Annie Clinton books that I might enjoy. His wife joined him. They said, be sure to vote, but be sure to vote for the right one. And I said, I will. In fact, I thought Hillary's speech at the Democratic Convention was the most inspiring speech I've ever heard in my entire life. And they didn't have anything to say to me after that. I went away thinking, I need to read a non-ridiculous book that makes the case against Hillary, just to balance things out. But another source of bias described in True Enough is called the hostile media phenomenon. According to Stanford psychologist Lee Ross, if I see the world as all black and you see the world as all white, and some person comes and tells us it's partially black and partially white, we're both going to be unhappy. So it's given rise to cable news networks that will tell you that it's all black or that it's all white. No more Walter Cronkite. Another source of bias or truthiness is peripheral processing. We can't be experts on everything. There's so much knowledge in the world today and so much detail about each field of knowledge. Sometimes instead of drilling down into an important subject, we listen to experts. But some of the experts are phony. And you can delay regulation of tobacco, for example, or dealing with climate change just by conjuring up some phony experts. That's called peripheral processing. So let's not grab an opinion that's convenient and looks delicious like a candy bar. Don't be intimidated by experts, but don't embrace experts just because they quell your fears or confirm your fears or make you feel good. Even us smart people have to question the experts, right? Their credentials, their reasoning, their facts. Consider any evidence that points to a different conclusion. Sometimes you might be surprised. So now let's say you've pried that 2x4 plank out of your own eyeball and you noticed a speck of sawdust in the eyeball of a Facebook friend. You've achieved clarity. How do you share that clarity while remaining kind? Here, let me share some thoughts from Meg Barnhouse. Some of you know who she is. She is a beloved figure in this congregation. She's a UU minister who used to live in Spartanburg, and while we were in between ministers at one point, she was preaching very regularly here. She's funny, smart, and the main reason I got into improv comedy. Meg has that gift of responding in the moment to anything that happens in a church service and weaving it seamlessly into her sermon. And I'd given a number of sermons and really envied that talent of hers, that skill of hers, and wanted to get it for myself. So when I heard about improv classes in Greenville, I signed up and haven't looked back. 3 weeks ago, I was in Austin for a one-week improv intensive class and was able to attend Meg's church, First UU Church of Austin, Texas. During her sermon, Meg talked about the deep empathy required for persuasion, which is another way to look at taking the speck out of somebody else's eye. She referred to the FBI's hostage negotiation manual. It turns out you cannot reason a hostage taker into surrendering. The way to succeed is deep, empathetic listening. You listen to the hostage taker and ask questions so that you really understand why they are upset and doing what they're doing. You reach such a deep understanding that, as Meg put it, you're almost at the point of thinking, tomorrow I'm going to take me a hostage too. So, at that point, how do we burst that echo bubble? It's a sad fact that in our age there is so much fear and a huge amount of distrust. People must have a huge amount of distrust to believe that the government would destroy the World Trade Center to lay the groundwork for a war, or to believe that government would deliberately spread AIDS, or to believe that science would make data to prove that climate change is real. We're not going to fix that by calling people idiots. We can help fix it by achieving clarity for ourselves and then listening to others. It's not just stupid arguments and phony facts we must deal with. The underlying challenge is fear and mistrust. Perfect love casts out fear. More than anything, we need to love and listen and be very, very kind to one another.